Truth be known, that's the way a lot of people feel today about church. And I'm afraid after COVID, post-COVID, we had a conversation this morning. I had one this week with somebody, and they said, what's the church doing about this or about that? And I said, I don't think the church knows what to do right now. We're kind of stuck in this area of we don't know what worked pre-COVID, may not work post-COVID. Wednesday night, we had 16 teenagers show up, and I think it's the most we've had since before COVID happened. And I was ecstatic with that number. Awana's had a good number, too, so I don't know, but let's look at Joshua 24, okay? We're going to spring off of that video. I'm going to read part of the chapter, and I'm going to encourage you to open up your Bible and follow along with me. I'm going to read from the New American Standard. The title of the message this morning is, Do You Have a Witness Rock? Joshua 24 starts off, Then Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel at Shechem, and called for their elders of Israel, their heads, their judges, and their officers, and they presented themselves before God. Joshua said to all the people, This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. From ancient times your father lived beyond the Euphrates, namely Terah, the father of Abraham and the father of Nahor, and they served other gods. Go to verse 5. Then I sent Moses and Aaron, and I plagued Egypt by what I did in the midst, and afterward I brought you out. So I brought your fathers out of Egypt, and you came to the sea, and Egypt pursued your fathers with chariots and horsemen to the Red Sea. But when they cried out to the Lord, he put darkness between you and the Egyptians, and brought the sea upon them and covered them. And your own eyes saw what I did to Egypt, and you lived in the wilderness for a long time. Go to verse 11. Then you crossed the Jordan and came to Jericho, and the citizens of Jericho fought against you, and the Amorite, and the Perizzite, and the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Girgashite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Therefore I handed them over to you. Then I sent the hornet before you, and it drove out the two kings of the Amorites from you, not by your sword nor your bow. And I gave you a land on which you had not labored, and cities which you had not built, and you have lived in them. You are eating of vineyards and olive groves, which you did not plant. Verse 14 says, Now, therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth, and do away with the gods which your father served before, beyond the Euphrates River and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the Euphrates River, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. The people answered and said, Far be it from us that we would abandon the Lord to serve other gods. Now go to verse 26. And Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God, and he took a large stone and set it up there under the oak that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. Then Joshua said to all the people, Behold, this stone shall be a witness against us, because it has heard all the words of the Lord which he spoke to us. So it shall be a witness against you, that you do not deny your God. Then Joshua dismissed the people, each to his inheritance. So Joshua used a rock to remind the people of the conversation they had that day between them and Joshua and God. And Joshua was telling the people that the stone heard all the words they said on that day, and he wanted them to remember what they said when they saw the rock. So witness trees and witness rocks are still, valuable today, all right? Let me show you a picture of one. This was in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And in 2008, this is a honey locust, and there was a windstorm that damaged it so much it sheared the top of the tree off. And Gettysburg park officials worried that what remained would prove unstable and it would pose a safety hazard to the thousands of tourists that come in each year. Historians say that that tree was a place that a New Hampshire volunteer battery held the ground on the second day of the battle. And then later that day, a Union Colonel Samuel Carroll led the brigade as they raced to the tree to drive back the Confederates from East Cemetery Hill. Go to the next slide, Mike. 4 months later, you know, I'm going to weave Abraham Lincoln in some sermons. Lincoln took a wood platform and he gave the Gettysburg Address. Go to the next slide, Mike. You see right there is Lincoln. Go to the next slide. Right there is that witness tree. They say it may have been 10 to 15 years old at the time. The tree's leafless branches are captured in the background there. And I thought if that tree could talk, what it would tell us. witness trees. They're all over. Witness rocks. Just like the witness rock that Joshua talked about to the nation of Israel. So let me ask you, do you have a witness rock or a witness tree in your life that reminds you of some various times in your life? We have pictures today, and we'll hearken back to pictures and look at that and think about times previously. I look at pictures of our family, and I see pictures when I was a kid with Mom and Dad, and I think that was just yesterday. And then I'll see pictures of our kids when they was young, and I think, man, that was just last night. And that's a witness picture of how our times was. Well, let me ask you, do you have a witness rock or a witness tree or some witness about that's a reminder of your life when you walked with when your walk with the Lord was close? Your walk may now be close with the Lord. Okay? Do you have anything that will serve as a reminder moving forward of that time? Because our life ebbs and flows. We get close to the Lord, and then we'll fade away. Then we'll get close again. So Joshua reminded the nation of the Lord, and he was telling them how good he had been to them and to their forefathers. And Joshua issued a challenge to the nation. And it was a challenge to be courageous, to set aside their fears, to live out their purpose. And in the last chapter, he's given some teaching, and he issues another challenge to them. And it seems like every church period history has had a challenge given to the people. The church needs to be challenged periodically. And I've wondered, are we going through that challenging right now? Yeah, we are. Okay, how are we going to look 5, 10 years from now? Challenges, sometimes you can go back to the Bible and pull a verse and go, this is apropos to our time right now. I read a book recently by a man named O.S. Hawkins, and he posed a question of what is a question for this time of the church. And in it, he went back to the first generational church, and he said they were faced with the question of John 13:38. Put that up, Mike. The question was, will you lay down your life for my sake? And the early church, you can go back and look, how many of those people gave up their life as martyrs for the faith? They openly opposed the Roman government, and the Roman government killed them for their beliefs. James, Peter, and Paul, they all say, died a martyr's death. And they were followed in the second century and the third century by people like Polycarp of Smyrna, Ignatius of Antioch. They were disciples of the Apostle John, who pointed them to Christ. So that was the question for the early church. Then another question came around 325 AD. Put that up, Mike. And it's the question, what do you think of the Christ and whose son is he? In this question, the church was brought to a city called Nicaea, and it's an ancient Greek city. And a man named Arius of Alexandria was preaching that Jesus was not eternal with the Father, but yet God created him, and he was just a created being. And out of this, you've heard of the Council of Nicaea. It formed, and from that, they settled and affirmed for the church that the Son, Jesus, was of the same nature as the Father. The cool thing about this in modern time is this was talked about just a few years ago, and you may not have heard of the Council of Nicaea, but I'd say you probably heard this song. Mike, play the song by the Newsboys. Just got a little snippet.
We believe in God the Father. We believe in Jesus Christ. We believe in the Holy Spirit, and He's given us new life. We believe in the crucifixion. We believe that He conquered death. We believe in the resurrection, and He's coming back again. We believe.
You've heard that song, right? Okay, that was a song that sprung from the Council of Nicaea. They came up with the creed, and that was essentially what they were saying. I love that because it taught a new generation some eternal truths about who Jesus and the Holy Spirit and God is. So the Council of Nicaea had that question, what do you think of Christ? Whose son is he? Then came a period of the church that they entered a dark area, and it was when the Roman popes held the clutches of the church in their grasp. And there were folks known as the Reformers that broke through, and they were confronted with the question, John 11:40. Put that up, Mike. And that question says, did I not say, if you believe, you would see the glory of God? And so, with the book of Romans, Martin Luther, you've heard of him, he took and nailed his 95 theses to the door of a church in Germany at Wittenberg. And after that, the glory of God filled Europe for a period of time. It's pretty phenomenal to go back and just look at history. There was men of like John Calvin and John Knox and Leo Judd and William Farrell. And it rose because of that question. And they took that question literally and said, we're going to answer that. Well, then there was another period of church history. And it was the great missionary movement. There were men like Hudson Taylor and David Livingston. And after that, men like Bill Wallace, who would leave the comfortable confines of their house and go off to a foreign land to talk about Christ. And their question was Luke 18:8. Put that up, Mike. It says, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? And those missionaries took that verse and said, we're going to see that he does find faith. We're going to take faith in Africa and China and South America, places that may never have heard that. You take church history up to the 20th century now, okay? And the church of the 20th century, especially the last half of the 20th century, was filled with prosperity. The church gained influence, and we gained buildings in the 20th century. And very subtly, the emphasis of godly power changed to worldly influence. And politics became a part of the church. And the church would become big business. I talked about that in a sermon some time back. But the church became big business, and we got involved with politics. And we said, we're going to change things. And it sounds great doing that. But I think the question then came, John 21:15, that Jesus asked the 20th century church. Put that up. Do you love me more than these? Now we find ourselves in the 21st century. Actually, we're in the third decade of the 21st century. Is that not nuts to think about? How time has just flown? And I think we're right now challenged with the question that, or with really the challenge that Joshua gave at the end of his life, and it's Joshua 24:15. Look back in your copy, okay? Look at what Joshua says, and I think it's for our time today. But if it is disagreeable in your sights to serve the Lord, choose for yourself this day who you're going to serve. You make that choice. It's laid at your feet right now. This is a message for Christians, okay? If you don't know Christ, you're just sitting through as a participant this morning listening. This is a message for the church. Choose for yourself this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served, which were beyond the Euphrates River, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. Look at what he resolved, though. But as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. Doesn't matter about anybody else. You go home at night and you shut your door, we have no idea how you live your life. But you have that settled choice to say, it doesn't matter what else is going on, as for me, that's individual choice. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And I believe we're in the times now that we're church members, we're debating all manner of things. People are leaving one church for another like it's nothing. They've been in the church for some time. We're debating how to respond to COVID, and we're losing friendships over that. And we're getting more and more into politics, and we're seeing more hatred spewed at various groups and religion. And I think take that challenge in Joshua 24:15 and couple it with Matthew 16:15. I think this is a question we have today. Who do you say that I am? As Jesus asking his disciples, who do you say that Christ is? And if you say that Christ is the one you're following, then you have to make the decision Joshua made. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. That's a settled choice we have to make. So when you look at the last 125 years of the church, how Christianity has ebbed and flowed, I want to show you how that where Christianity is today. I had another slide, and I apologize. I worked yesterday and the day before on it. This is not it. We're going to get to that. But I want to start with the early generation of the 20th century, and I want to show you where the church is, I believe, today. So you've heard about the different generations. The greatest generation, known as the GI generation, they were veterans of World War II, and they were born between 1901 and 1927. My granddad is in that generation. Okay, he was born in 1917. The Pew Research Center is a nonpartisan think tank that informs the public about current issues, attitudes, and trends shaping the world. And they're really good around the issues of religion, which kind of shows you where we are today. But they said this generation, the greatest generation, 66% of them had absolute certain belief in God. They knew God was real. They knew that God was eternal. They knew that God was the sustainer of life. So then you had the silent generation after that. And that generation is just about extinct now. They were born between 1928 and 1945. This group, think about it, lived through the Great Depression and lived through World War II. They was pretty seasoned in life. I mean, they had trials come on them. I don't know if we've ever seen things like that that's hit our generation. But they said 71% of that group had absolute certain belief in God. So it rose a little bit. Then came the baby boomer generation. They were born between 1946 and 1964. That's my parents. They dropped slightly. They went from 71% of the greatest of the silent generation to 69% that said, we believe in absolute faith in God. So it begins to trend down. Then you got Gen Xers. That's my generation. They were born between 1965 and 1980. 64% of them said that they have absolute belief in God. Then came the millennial generation. Most people say that's where it all went off the tracks at with the millennial generation. They were born between 1981 and 1996. That generation saw a drop in absolute belief in God go down to 54%. 71% just a few years earlier. Then the Gen Z. They're born between 1997 and 2012. Their absolute belief in God dropped to 50%. See the dramatic decrease. Went from 71% down to 50%. Generation who are kids now are going to be the largest generation that's ever been. And they're going to be the most diverse generation. 50% of kids born after 2012 are going to be non-Hispanic white. Diverse. They've been called the most technologically supplied generation ever, and they're predicted to be the most formally educated generation ever. Globally, they're going to have the greatest amount of wealth. Some data says 96% of that alpha generation believe that people should be treated fairly no matter what they look like or their values. 95% of the generation alpha already are climate crusaders. And here's what else it says about them. They're being shown to be the least rebellious, the most tolerant, and the least happy, and the most anxious. And the trend continues to decline. Do they believe in absolute belief and faith in God? And because of the state of the church, it's already being said they're going to be the least religious generation in history, and they're actually being called nuns. It's not Catholic women. It's nuns, meaning they have no religious affiliation. They're agnostic, they're atheist, or they just say, I don't have a belief. Now I want to show you the trend in church attendance, okay? See, in 1940, Gallup began doing this about 80 years ago, and in 1940, 73% of Americans that were adults went to church. In 2020, it dropped to below 50% for the first time. That was right in the midst of COVID. I'm anxious to see 3 to 5 years from now where that trend goes, because I would dare say that number continues to go down. I think it's the time that we're in, and some would say, well, Jesus said, or the apostle said, there would be a great falling away before the Antichrist comes, so that may be what this is. And if you want to cave into that, that's your prerogative. But the matter is, we don't know when Christ is going to return. Paul was looking for him back in his day. It may be another 1,000 years before Christ comes back. But I want to show you in Joshua 24 what Joshua preached to them, and I think it's very relevant for our time, okay? The first thing Joshua did was point back to that generation's Christian heritage. Look back at verse 2 of Joshua 24. This is what Joshua said to all the people, okay? This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. From ancient times, your father lived beyond the Euphrates River, namely Terah, the father of Abraham and the father of Nahor, and they served other gods. And I took your father Abraham from beyond the Euphrates River and led him through all the land of Canaan and multiplied his descendants and gave him Isaac. And to Isaac I gave Jacob and Esau, and to Esau I gave Mount Seir to possess it, but Jacob and his sons went down to Egypt. What Joshua is telling them is go back to your heritage, okay? In this aspect of the church, we're not so good, okay? Some traditions need to be kept. We want to abandon traditions. We need to keep some. And some we don't need to keep. Okay, some we keep in the church traditions because one particular generation just enjoyed doing that. And it becomes irrelevant for future generations. Let me give you one example. And some of you all may disagree with me vehemently on this. All right, Sunday school. For years, Sunday school worked to come in before church, have a class, then go to church, and then you go home. Is that the best way to do Sunday school today? I don't know. That's a tradition. But is there a better way for us to look at doing it to help meet needs moving forward? That's one aspect. One generation finds a particular method that works and it plays out, and the church doesn't want to change because that's what they know. But the tradition of our descendants trusting in the Lord is one that we should celebrate and retain. Okay? Churches tend to run from this. But Joshua was reminding the people of how their descendants had trusted in the Lord. So let me ask you this question, church. Those of you that's been attending Gravely for any period of time. Do you have any idea of anything that this church struggled with 40 years ago? Any challenge they came together and banded together to pray about? We don't. We don't think about those things. I dare say many of our church attenders could even come up with how did Gravely get started to begin with. But Joshua was telling them, go back to your heritage. Look and see how your fathers and your mothers and your grandfathers and grandmothers trusted in the Lord. I think back about the old timers in the area that I got to know in church as a kid. And sure, some of their thinking may have been outdated, but there was one thing I can point back to them in. They had faith and trust in the Lord. They knew when it came harvest time in their garden that they went out there and they had to do just to make ends meet. They knew where that bounty had come from. God used them as an instrument to work that land, but it was Him that brought that blessing about. That's an aspect of the church today we're losing. To go back to our Christian heritage. Look at what Joshua does. He walks them through not only their heritage, but how the Lord provided for them. Look at verse 5. Then I sent Moses and Aaron, and I plagued Egypt by what I did in the midst, and afterward I brought you out. That's just goodness. So let me challenge you. Do you spend any time reflecting on the Lord's goodness in your life? We spend too much energy on just living life sometimes, getting through the day. Anybody in here have stress in your life? Anybody in here have stress in the workplace? Anybody in here have stress with your family? Morris, I'm just getting through the day. I don't have time to step back and reflect. I mean, come on, it feels like I just wake up in the morning time and get through life and I'm going to bed. Anybody else feel that way? I'm going, man, time just flies by. I go in, I read the newspaper the morning time and we'll pull it up on my iPad. And I've always got to go through and change it and got to go to today, pull up that date. And I think it was just no time. I was back in May pulling up that particular paper. Listen to this. One survey says 77% of people experience stress that affects their physical health today. Almost 8 out of 10 people say, I've got stress that affects my health. 73% of people have stress that impacts their mental health. 48% or almost 50% have trouble sleeping at night because of stress. You have trouble sleeping at night because of stress? You ever wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and your heart's just racing and you're going, oh, what am I going to do about this tomorrow? Stress that just comes to us. I would love to see those statistics differentiated between those who profess Christ and those who don't, but I would say the numbers aren't any different. I would say they're just about parallel with it. And this is what our children and our grandchildren and our family are witnessing today. Do you ever spend time just reflecting on the goodness of God and thanking Him for what He has done for you in your life at this particular moment of your life? Do you have any witness rocks or anything you can point back to and go, I remember this time when He was with me? Some of you all have been through some pretty horrendous things in life, okay? You've been through an illness, you've been through a family thing. You can hearken back to that. Hey, the Lord brought you through that. That was a great time in your life, and that's something you can step back and say, this is what He's doing for me. So not only hearkening back to our history, but hearkening back to the goodness God has done for us. That's in the past tense. We have no idea the blessings He's going to give us today or tomorrow or next week or whatever, but I know what He's done for me right now. I know what He's done for me in the past. And I step back sometimes and look and go, why have You been so good to me, Lord, as an individual? Look at verse 11 then, okay? He moves on through. He says, you crossed the Jordan and you came to Jericho. And the citizens of Jericho fought against you, and the Amorite, and the Perizzites, and the Canaanites, and the Hittite, and the Girgashites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, and all them people. And he says, therefore, I handed them over to you. Then I sent the hornet before you and drove out the two kings. Wouldn't you like to pray that prayer? Hey, Lord, send the hornet and get rid of these people for me, whoever that is. It drove out the two kings from the Amorites from you, not by your sword, not by your bow. And I gave you a land on which you had not labored, and cities which you had not built, and you have lived in them. You are eating of vineyards and olive groves which you did not plant. He's saying, look at present day. Don't go back to history. look at currently what's going on. They're encouraged to look at the blessings in each of their lives. Let me remind you something, folks. On our worst days, on our absolute worst days, or somebody would trade places with you in a heartbeat and say, man, how blessed I am. But we get all wrapped up in our individual circumstances. Oh, I've got to have this better. I've got to have this different. Blessings at times are a matter of perspective. And we're told to count our blessings. All right? There's a gospel song. What is that song? Count your many blessings one by one. And you can't do that, okay? I mean, it'd be like trying to count the raindrops that's fallen in some torrential downpour. But just like the rain, blessings are meant to flow down and disperse so that the entire land may flourish. And that's what it means when it says, my cup runneth over. Okay? I mean, I hear people say, I just want those blessings on the fringe of that cup. What that means is my cup runs over and people are seeing that. We're focused on what we lack instead of focused on what we've been so graciously granted. Okay? Despite this abundance of blessings, we often lose sight of the blessings right in front of our eyes. Listen to this, okay? There's always going to be somebody richer than you. There's always going to be somebody more attractive than you. There's always going to be somebody more successful than you and more fortunate than you. I read this week, somebody wrote, we have sight only for things beyond our front door, taking our health and families for granted, and we coldly fixate on a coworker's salary, a neighbor's possessions, a celebrity's lifestyle, a competitor's market share, or another's power. We're always focused on what's on the other side of that fence. James Addison, an English author from another time, he wrote this, a contented mind is the greatest blessing a person can enjoy in this world. Contented with what you have at this moment in time. Always wanting more. Your bank account grows to this and you want a little bit more. You get this job and I'm looking to move up in the ladder. Is it any wonder that the belief in God has decreased from generation to generation and church attendance continues to flounder? So I want to ask you, what blessings do you have right now? At this moment in time? Or do you think your blessings are in somebody else's yard? That yard's always greener. Their yard may be greener, but you know what? They may have worked harder to make their yard greener. We step back and think, our yard can't be as green as our neighbor's. Yes, it can. Stop and look around. Look at John 1:16 here. Put that up, Mike. It says, from the fullness of his grace, we all have received one blessing after another. One after another, after another, after another. So let me tell you something, folks. Let your children know about the blessings you have. Let your grandchildren know about the blessings that you have. Let your relatives and your friends know about the blessings that you have and where they come from. Do you have thankfulness and gratitude in your tool belt for daily living? We love to talk about in church all manners of sins, but a sin you don't hear talked about that much is ingratitude. Okay? Webster's defines ingratitude as forgetfulness of or poor return for kindness received. So it can also be defined as not appreciating or valuing what you have been given at this moment in time. Unexpressed gratitude is ingratitude. Unexpressed gratitude is ingratitude. So when was the last time you expressed gratitude and thankfulness? When's the last time I did that? And when was the last time your family saw that in you? And I'm not talking about you post something on Facebook or some other social media. I mean, you just say thank you to somebody. Right now is a great opportunity for Christians at restaurants to have gratitude and thankfulness. Those people that work in those restaurants, if they're there for any moment in time, hey, they earn their money. I mean, in a major way. You walk up now, pretty common, there's a sign that'll be up that says what? We're lowest labor, we love to have your business, but it's going to take time for us to get your food to you. Thank those people. That's living our life out, living our Christianity out. I guess it's still this way. You talk to restaurant servers, and the one group they hate to see coming in is who? The church crowd. Why? They're horrible tippers. They're the most hateful. They're the most persnickety. We should be just the opposite, turn that around. So Joshua's saying, hey, be grateful for what we have at this moment, okay? Have gratitude and thankfulness in your tool belt you can pull out and you can live. In fact, I hold that somebody who's grateful and thankful in their heart, you can't be pessimistic and negative. But you show me somebody who's pessimistic and negative, just always grumbling about everything, you know what I'm saying? Rah, 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 rah. Then that's the person that I'm going, you don't have that settled peace in your life. Because that settled peace outflows. You can't help but it comes out. The Bible says from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. That gratitude and thankfulness is in your heart. It's going to come out. It's not going to stay in there. But instead, we let all other things come out of our mouth. You know what I'm saying? It's not good. Look at verse 14. Look at what Joshua then tells the people. I'm going through all this stuff. Look at your heritage, where you come from. Look at the blessings you've been given. Now he says, now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth. Joshua was telling the people, serve him with integrity, with a wholeness in your life. Not serving him based off your circumstances or based off the songs that are sung in church on Sunday morning, or if the minister had prepared or if he hadn't prepared. Serve the Lord, fear the Lord. Serve him with sincerity and with truth. Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth, and do away with the gods which your fathers served beyond the Euphrates River and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. Verse 15, but if it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom ye will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the Euphrates River, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Joshua lays out two choices there. He lays out a road. There's a fork here. They were being asked to do what Rahab had done years earlier. Choose for yourself. Listen to this. Now, I think some people need to work through this. My religion is not mine because of mom and dad. I'm so thankful they raised me in church, okay? But I had to choose for myself, and you have to choose as well for yourself today. Choose for yourself today. There's urgency in this. Man's life goes by so quickly, and it seems like I said earlier, you just get up out of bed and you're laying back down. You're a student in school, and then you're an older person. Choose for yourself this day, today. Choose today that urgency who you're going to serve. Joshua didn't threaten them. Joshua didn't coerce them. It's almost out of character here. Joshua's saying it's simple. Hey, you choose who you're going to serve. And he was setting an example by his own choice. Look at verse 15. But if it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourself today whom you will serve. He wasn't forcing them to do that. Whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the Euphrates River, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That's a settled decision. I'm going to do this regardless of anybody else. That's where Christianity is supposed to be at. We have generations coming behind us, and they have choices for themselves. But I wonder how many looked at Joshua that day and said, you know what, that's the example I want to be. Each of us are examples. Every one of us in this auditorium and online, we're examples. You're examples to your friends at school. You're examples to your coworker. You're examples to your family. You're a good example or you're a bad example. But you are an example, and somebody is looking up to you. We have generations that has moved away from the Lord. But I want to remind us, we don't know when the Lord's coming back. We need to keep moving forward. Then look at what Joshua said when he challenged the people. Verse 16. The people, he challenges them. Then the people said, far be it from us that we would abandon to serve the Lord to serve other gods. We're with you, Joshua. We're not going to abandon this. We're not going to serve the other gods. And look at verse 26. And Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God. And he took a large stone, set it up there under the oak tree that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. Then Joshua said to all the people, behold, this stone shall be a witness against us, because it has heard all the words of the Lord which he spoke to you. So it shall be a witness against you, so that you do not deny your God. Then Joshua dismissed the people, each to his own inheritance. Was that rock ever going to speak out and say anything to those people? No, it was not. But what it was intended to do is when you pass by that, remember this conversation. What do you have in your life today that prompts you to remember those types of things? Do you have anything? I would encourage you to begin to build you an inventory of those things. I'm not talking about that we worship those things, but it's just those things you can think about. I've mentioned before journaling. Maybe just getting on a computer and jotting down some blessings and pulling it back up after a period of time to see, where was I then? How is my life being blessed now? We all tend to stray from the narrow way that Christ talked about. We all get stressed with life and work. But we need to be reminded that the Lord was with our forefathers. That's the same Lord we're serving today. When others begin to say that Jesus was not God himself, he's only a good man, there's multiple ways to heaven, or there's no God and there's not a heaven, does your core speak out that you know otherwise? I hope you can see that we've been in gradual decline, but I want to provide you some hope. Joshua said, choose you this day who you will serve. That's a personal choice. You've got to make that decision. Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way they should go, and when they're old, they won't depart from it. And teaching doesn't just happen with words. Teaching happens with actions. I love working with kids on Wednesday night. I love coming in and teaching, but I love sometimes more going to Krispy Kreme or going to Carowinds, because that's the place you can interact with and have real life lessons. You understand what I'm talking about? We come in, we're expected to teach from the Bible, and bless God, have those holy things and walk around going, that's right, just be like that. But it's when we go out, we're living our life every single day. The video I showed at the beginning, I think, resonates with many people today in church. I want to show you the rest of that video, though, of how that woman dealt with church. Go ahead, Mike.
He would invite me over and over again to the church that I am at now. I remember a Thursday night going to the young adult ministry, finally going, and I walked into the church and just really felt something different for the first time. And then I decided that was okay. It wasn't horrible. I'm going to check it out on a Sunday. At the end of service, pastor speaks this blessing over us, and it's from Numbers. It's, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you. That whole passage. And growing up as a little girl, my mom would tuck us into bed and she would pray that exact blessing over me as a little girl. And I just broke down in tears. I was like, wow, I think this is my church home. And I got plugged in and started serving. And it hasn't been a perfect journey, but I made the choice that day that I was going to continue to come. I made the choice to be committed to that church and to continue to stay. Now, I mean, obviously I love my church and I love being a part of this community and I love belonging there. And I feel like I genuinely understand why God designed the church, why the local body is so important. I understand why community is so valuable, why accountability is so valuable, why friendships are so valuable, why mentorship is so valuable. And it has really just elevated me to this new level of love for the church and love for Christ and passion for belonging somewhere and communicating to, you know, the world around me that being a part of a community is important, and finding belonging does matter. And I have found that in the place where I'm at, and it's a great feeling.
Folks, the last part of that video she was talking about, that's what church is all about, mentorship, being a part of, belonging, things of that nature. Early on, though, in the last part of that video, there was some witness rocks she talked about. Did you pick up on any of them? The pastor offered a blessing out of the Bible, and it reminded her of when her mother prayed over her. Those are the witness rocks that I'm talking about. Harkens us back to those times that we say, you know what? That's when I felt close to the Lord. I'm just challenging you this morning. Where's the church at? Who do we invite this week to come to church? Who do we say, hey, come and be a part of Bible study and the singing and music, but it's to be part of community. It's not to come in just to have a proof point during the week and we have X number of people here and then we go on our separate way, but it's to have that community that we come together and we're part of each other. That's what spirituality is. It's coming together and it's understanding I'm a part of you and you're a part of me and we're moving through this life together. And as Christians, we go back to the early church, they understood community. They accepted Christ. If they went back to their village, they could be killed. So they went and they got to be part of a community here at these different places, Antioch and so forth, so forth. That's what church is designed to be. I'm afraid we're like the first part of that video, the way churches are. But the second half is the way church is intended to be. So what is your witness rocks this morning? Go ahead, guys.
All right, please stand with us.